Meditation Hall and Meditation by S.S. Cohen. Old devotees of Sri Ramana congratulate themselves on being able to witness during recent years the steady growth of the ashram and its activities. After the stormy events of the first decade following the Mahanirvana of the Master, calm has prevailed and a new order has been established. This has resulted in the building and consecration of the beautiful small shrine over Sri Bhagavan's Samadhi, the publication of the now celebrated quarterly, The Mountain Path, the lengthening list of old and new books published, and now the commencement of the construction of a huge meditation hall contiguous to the Samadhi. It is understood that the present hall, which has been hallowed by the Master's presence for a quarter of a century, will continue to serve those who may wish to meditate in it. The ashram authorities are fully justified in providing for future contingencies and building a more spacious hall to serve both as an auditorium and a place of meditation. With the same perspective in view, the next effort will, funds permitting, be the extension of the accommodation within and without the ashram compound to relieve the occasional room congestion which is being felt by the new arrivals whose numbers are steadily growing. It must be said for the authorities that they have been scrupulously following Sri Bhagavan's idea of making the guests who hail from distant lands feel at home in the matter of the twin necessities of food and shelter. These devotees are not flitting tourists but potential residents for comparatively long periods. Some of them have been here for years. The foremost objective which draws foreign devotees to this ashram is the application of Sri Bhagavan's teaching in their lives and their sadhana, which means simple living and meditation. To stay in Tiruvannamalai without meditation is to deny oneself the sweetest fruit of one's opportunity. Bhagavan tells us that meditation is the repository of all the virtues which a seeker needs to cultivate in order to attain his highest ideal, peace and inner freedom, devotion, knowledge, service, love, surrender, and finally the total merging into the Lord who shines in the hearts of all as consciousness and bliss. Whatever Bhagavan said and wrote had a pointed bearing on meditation. Inquire and you will find. Meditate and you will arrive is the import of his teachings. As all thoughts rise from the heart or consciousness, so all properly conducted inquiry eventually ends in the heart. It cannot go amiss. The Master's ideas have to be thoroughly understood and assimilated to give the right direction to the vichara, that is inquiry and meditation. Half knowledge and half illusion will produce garbled results. Mastered knowledge is marked by determined persistence and unshakable confidence. It cannot be denied that the beginnings are difficult, as all beginnings are. The practicant who grows quickly despondent will land back again in the material world to which his heart and his restless mind incline. But as the vichara goes on in right earnest, day after day and month after month, the value of the objects as real entities will gradually diminish, causing a corresponding diminution in the attachment to them. Mental quiescence will follow the periods of concentration. The aim of the vichara is to expose the fictitious nature of the objects and then to dive deeper to their substratum, the self, the true I of the inquirer. Objects in themselves have neither the substance, the qualities, nor the stability which we ascribe to them. Being mere thoughts, they flit for a second or to a disappear. What gives them the semblance of solidity, continuity, and permanence are the faculties of the mind that perceives them, the senses, and most of all, that cementing faculty which is called memory. Let memory withdraw and the cementing force will disintegrate, bringing down all the connecting links which give significance and coherence to the material as well as the physical world. Cause and effect, past and future, I and mine, birth, growth and death, all human relationships, all natural laws will cease to exist. They will crumble to dust. Even knowledge, which depends on the memory to be retained, and motion, which is the memory of a series of positions in a series of instants, will be no more. The objects will then assume different appearances in a world which has come to a complete standstill and of which nothing has remained but the fugitive instant, isolated from its predecessor and successor. What attachment can a man of a mature vichara conceive for such a ghost-like, vaporous world? Why? While the inquiry into the objects permits us to understand the nature of illusion, the study of the effects of the memory on meditation will permit us to guard against them. In meditation, the memory becomes so highly active as to oppose all attempts at concentration. The body and the memory are the greatest enemies of the sadhana. The body, because of its needs, its habits, its longings, its human and non-human ties, its health and diseases, and the memory because of a life rich in experience. They continue to pop up during and in between the meditation and disturb us. Yet, relentless practice over the years will eventually grind down all oppositions. The extroverted tendencies will gradually be replaced by the introverted ones till the source of all things, the self, is reached. The spiritual current which is generated by the steady meditation is far more powerful than the unstable, unsubstantial thoughts and sweeps them out of existence as the midday sun sweeps away the heavy mist from the surface of the sea. This current will reveal the radiant consciousness which underlies thoughts and which will no more be befogged by them. On the other hand, there are the fortunate ones who feel at home with meditation right from the beginning. They start with a mind which has already attained an appreciable degree of detachment from the glamour of sense perceptions, a mind already bent inward. These take to meditation as ducks to water and cannot give it up. It is they that seek the shelter of an ashram to give free play to their inner urge in solitude and close to the Guru, whose presence they feel in his old earthly abode. In the half century of its existence, during and after the Master's lifetime, Sri Ramanashramam has harbored a number of such aspirants who lived in it for years, made fervent efforts, and arrived. They are standing witnesses to the truth of the Master's teaching. They offer encouragement to those who are ready to follow in their footsteps. The supreme goal is easy of access to the pilgrims who tread the path without luggage. Over the entrance to the path, an ancient inscription in gold letters reads, "Walk on, halt not, the goal is in sight."